my brain can pretty much trick my body into pretending it's not sick, and I'll function the whole day. I mean, deep inside, I'll feel like total shit, but I'll still be able to function. So it's soon.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 149, and we are doing something a little different today because we're still recovering from ye olde PAX East.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So today we're going to bring you guys a bunch of the floor interviews we did while going around and playing people's games and hanging out and such.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, those are fun. We last week, so hopefully everyone listened to episode 148. Where we posted our sort of our recaps that we did daily from our hotel room and from the concourse of PAX. And so today we're taking you down onto the expo floor to talk to the developers themselves.
I really love in the wrap up, because that's the second time we've done like a live wrap up one where we recorded something each day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's really wonderful to hear the slow dissension of our ability to put things together over those 3 days. Like, it's Friday. Seriously. We're like, Friday, everything's great. How's it going, everybody? And then Saturday's like, okay, Saturday was good. And then Sunday's just like, I don't know, man. I saw some stuff. And it was fine. It was a good time, I guess.
We're slowly falling apart.
Ash was swearing off sickness all weekend, but the evidence clearly shows that as the days went by, Ash was getting sick.
There was definitely audio evidence of me getting sick, which I still am right now.
Yeah. He would get up in the morning and hack up like three lungs and then be like, I'm fine, let's go. And I was like, dude, you are sick.
I tried to convince myself that I was totally fine, because I've noticed that if I have something really important to do, my brain can pretty much trick my body into pretending it's not sick, and I'll function the whole day. I mean, deep inside, I'll feel like total shit, but I'll still be able to function. So as soon as I got off the airplane and I landed back in Orlando, my body shut down and like it just I leaked from every hole.
Oh god!
Yeah. Oh boy! You really like to get prepared for PAX. You really need like a like a Hearts on Fire montage. Yeah. You got to train.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I started to feel some funkiness like Saturday night when we went out to dinner with everybody. And I was like, I'm drinking whiskey tonight. And sure enough, burned it away. Felt better the next morning. I was like, hey, okay, let's hang out, guys.
Pro tips.
We went on, this is an old story, but when Scott and I were on tour once, I got like mega sick, like probably 4 days into a 10-day tour. And I sing. So like I had to, like you can't just be like, and I'm sick, sorry, six other shows that I booked, you know? So every night, I'd roll into the club feeling miserable. I would do a shot of whiskey like 15 minutes before we get on stage, play a 40-minute set, get off, and then just like lay in the corner and want to die for the next hour and a half.
Most people in those cases would drink tea, but you were drinking whiskey.
Yeah, whiskey. They do hot toddies.
Do you think it really worked, or do you think it's sort of like a Dumbo's magic feather sort of situation? I mean, was it actually working, or was it your mind telling you it was working?
Oh, it works. There's a tipping point with whiskey, but like a shot of whiskey.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a tipping point. I think we've all seen that. But there's a like a shot of whiskey. That's why hot toddies work too, in part. It's like hot liquid plus whiskey. It burns stuff out, man. I don't know, for whatever reason, it works. But then if you do like 2, 3, 4, 5 shots, and then it's like, you know, sickness will take over in many ways. But yeah, it works. I believe in it.
Cool.
Believe.
It's not a permanent it's not a permanent remedy. Like, it doesn't make you better, but it'll make you feel better for, you know, an hour or so.
Like putting your finger in the dam, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good analogy.
Doesn't fix the problem.
Thanks.
Doesn't fix the problem, but it holds it off for a minute or two.
All right.
So today's program is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. And we're not going to talk about this in the news, and I know I keep talking about this book, but the Leviathan Wakes, the Expanse series, did officially get picked up by Sci-Fi and will be a TV series, and that is going to be absolutely amazing. So what you should do is go to audible.com right now. On us, go to www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA and get your free audiobook and listen to Leviathan Wakes, because it is a fantastic book, and you should listen to it and enjoy it.
You've got
to
be ahead of the curve.
You can listen to it on your iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 other devices anytime, anywhere. So go do that, audibletrial.com/ratedNA. And I highly, highly recommend you start on the Expanse series, because I think that TV show is going to be epic.
Sweet. Yeah, wait. You know what else I'd like to see in audiobook form is Patrick Weeks, The Palace Job.
Oh, yeah, that'd be really good.
I'm reading through it now, and it kind of reads like a almost like a D&D campaign, you know, the way that he tells the story. It's very sort of swashbuckling.
It's a great adventure tale.
Yeah. It really is, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if he knows anybody that could record their voices.
Sean Connery. You
know, to written word, but I think
I feel like I've heard a tryout here on this podcast before.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I don't think he wants that. He doesn't want the whole thing read by a drunken dwarf.
I don't know.
featuring Jennifer Hale, Ali Hillis, and Ash Sevilla.
Yeah!
Top billing right there.
Oh, man. Dreams do come true, guys.
So, Ash, what have you been up to since we hung out in Boston?
So, I did officially get sick for a couple days, but I did get a chance to – I had yesterday off, so I played some stuff. Because of a friend of the podcast, Bria Grant, mentioning Hearthstone, I actually picked up Hearthstone on iOS because that came out this week.
Did you now?
I did, and okay. I played it for about 5 hours last night.
Oh, God. You're going to have to tell me what your username is, my friend.
Did you pick it up as well?
I did.
Oh, wow.
I picked it up as well.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, the thing that I instantly, after the first 20 minutes, I'm like, holy shit, this is Magic the Gathering. Like, it's Magic the Gathering, but faster. So,
it's super simple to play.
Yeah, it's really simple. The system is almost identical to Magic the Gathering, but of course it's set in the Warcraft universe. Works really well on iOS. Really super enjoyable. I tried out a bunch of the different character classes, all of which have their own unique abilities, and you basically build a deck just like you would Magic the Gathering and go up against a variety of opponents. I even actually played against some other people online, and I didn't do horribly, so that was kind of fun too. I also picked up Infamous Second Son for the PS4.
Oh, wow. When did that come out?
Right before we were at PAX. Actually, the week of MegaCon is when it came out. So the week before PAX. And you know, it's really good. It was funny because when I turned on my PS4, I had like 2.5 hours of updates because I hadn't played my PS4 since.
It's my favorite PlayStation game to play is update.
Yeah, I know, right? So I plugged in. I'm like, I'm going to finally turn my PS4 back on. Turn the sucker on. It's like, you have to wait, you know, half a day. So
you still have to like guess if updates are downloading at that time and like find
it's,
them.
It's a little bit more. They actually let you know this time what's going on. So
the one is guilty of this now too in some ways.
There's a lot of firmware updates and such. But the game's a lot of fun. I'm not too deep into it, but I've already picked up two different power sets. One's called Neon, which is really cool. It gives you the power to turn light into energy, into like solid matter as well. So that's a really cool and unique power. Also lets you run at super speed, which is super fun. Looks beautiful. I can't stand the main protagonist. Like, honestly, he reminds me of like fucking Pauly Shore from like Encino Man.
Wow.
I'm like, I can't play this whole game. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I understand that they wanted to go for like a more like roguish, lighthearted lead character, but this guy is just like, you know, like, I can't even explain. He's too goofy all the time.
I mean, you really segmented our audience with that reference, by the way.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I had some time to play some games, and they're both a lot of fun. And still recovering from PAX, writing some PAX articles and spitting them out there. So definitely check out nerdappropriate.com for our upcoming PAX stuff, because there is more. What about you, Scott?
I also got Hearthstone, just because I've been looking for this, I guess, just a card game that I can play online that doesn't have a ridiculous microtransaction barrier to entry.
Yeah.
And this one kind of fits the bill. I tried the there was like a Star Wars game that came out recently, and
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, like all this stuff with the premium gems, it's the pricing on those kinds of games is ridiculous, and I feel like this is a little more tempered, which I like. But you know, like you, the game is fun. Also on Matt's recommendation, I bought Hitman Go, which came out this past week. It's cool, man. The art style is awesome. It looks like a 3D board game is the sort of the interface that you play on. Like,
really cool.
How long did you play it, Matt, at PAX on the show floor? Did you spend like a good amount of time?
I played through the first 12 parts of the first board.
Oh yeah.
And but I too picked it up. So
yeah.
I beat the first game set entirely now. Like perfect it all the way through. And then I started the second one last night. So
yeah. I'm not even as big a Hitman fan as you are, and I find a lot to enjoy about this game. And most of it is just like how fucking cool the presentation of the game is.
Yeah.
And then you know, at its core, it's kind of like a puzzle game, which makes it really fun to play. Hey guys, I finished Legend of Zelda, so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Oh, yay!
Newsflash, it's still really good, and I recommend everyone go out and play it. So that's all
PAX long, I have to say. All PAX long, Scott's, you know, pulling out his Game Boy, and he's street passing and stuff, and then he's playing Zelda too. And I'm like, and I would go like, oh man, you're playing Zelda again. And Ash would go, thank God, maybe he'll stop talking about it on the podcast.
There's just so much to do in that game, and I couldn't bring myself. You know, you ever play a game and you're like sad that it's about to end, so you kind of like you put off beating the game so that you can still exist in the game world, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
It's really surprising because in this game, when you finish it, they're like, see you later, you're done. And because of all the street pass stuff, I thought I'd be able just to roam around in the world and continue to collect things, but that's not at all how it works.
No,
once you beat the game, they just go in Nintendo fashion. They're like, hey, why don't you play it again? That's what they do with a lot of Nintendo games. And you guys already know this because you saw it last night. New high score in threes, everybody.
What?
I got a what comes after 392? 784 or something like that?
I don't know. I don't play.
Believe it.
You don't believe it? Yeah.
There's like an ongoing war between like you, Matt, and my wife. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean the scores increase exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife, Ash. So she posts a score. I posted a score and I was like, oh, it's not a fluke because I got 9-something again, because I got 9-something a while ago. And I got like 92.35. And then your wife's like, keep trying, Matt, and got like 93-something. And I was like, maybe you forgot about this one. So I posted my old score, which was like 9,800.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And then I know what happened. She saw that 9,800. She's like, I'm going to beat that. And then just sat on her phone playing threes until she beat 9,800.
Oh, yeah.
She?
That is precisely what happened.
And then,
which was great because it meant that I got to play video games.
Yeah, yeah. So then she scores like 99-something and posts back to me like, got you now or something like that. And then this asshole,
I just kind of blew it up.
20,000 points because he got 784 or whatever.
768. I just looked at it. Yeah.
Good Lord.
I don't want to say it was a fluke, but there were a lot of moments where I thought to myself, oh, this game is going to end right here. And then all of a sudden you combine, you know, you get this cascade effect where all the pieces line up and you're like, oh, okay, here we go. You know, 96.
It is a little, there's parts of it that are a little too random for me that like get frustrating. Like if you're having a really awesome run and then they just throw you like 5-2s in a row, and like at certain points there's just nothing you can do with that. Like you can't keep from the board filling up when you just get one number that's not matchable. You know what I mean?
And it's like the plus numbers make it really tricky too.
Yeah, because I was like, I thought I was, you know, how you slowly, the game, part of threes that's really awesome is you slowly figure things out while you're playing, right? Mm-hmm. Like you realize that, you know, you should realize this pretty early, but you realize that like the tiles will only come in on rows or columns that have something move on it.
And like they match, generally, right?
What's that?
Typically, it's like the row that you matched in is where the piece will appear on the other side.
Not always, though. Sometimes.
No, yeah, not always. That makes it tricky. Yeah.
So like little things like you'll slowly realize. And I thought, I was like, oh, well, maybe the plus numbers have the little like face dots on the bottom of them. And that way, you know what it, and it's like, no, they just say plus on it. You just have to like wild guess whether it's a 6 or a 12.
All you know is it's going to be more than 3. Like I got a 48 once doing that. And I had no idea what happened.
Yeah. So I wish there was like a little bit more pattern to some of this stuff that would be like slightly more. I understand why it's random. It's like Tetris essentially, but still.
My strategy for that round in particular was to minimize risk, you know? So
yeah,
if I could try to figure, like if it was a plus, I would try to bring the plus in a corner where there were the most different kinds of numbers, you know?
Right.
So I could go like, well, this could be a 3 or this could be like a 6 or a 12. And so if the plus comes in, I know that I can merge with one of them. That was kind of the goal there.
Mine generally is clear the ones and twos. Like that's my, my entire goal of the game is keep the ones and twos off the board and then move on. Usually that works. Okay. Yeah. But
the last thing I wanted to talk about was I've been looking for a board game to sort of, get my wife and sort of other casual players like on board with playing board games.
Right.
So I started out looking for cooperative board games and I did a lot of research with, you know, like the typical resources like Board Game Geek and the Dice Tower.
Uh-huh.
And I came across two games which are cooperative games, which I thought would be good for new players. The games are called Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert.
Oh, yeah.
Respectively. Yeah, yeah. Have you guys played either of those?
No,
they played them on tabletop.
Oh, cool. Well, it turns out that Forbidden Island you can get as an iPad game, like the board game in iPad form.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I picked it up and I played it. It's really cool. It's kind of like Pandemic, but not as complicated.
It's not as complicated and it's not as, I don't know a better way to put this, nerdy, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. There's not weird lore to figure out. There's not weird characters that are not understandable. I figure this was something that could be played with a broad range of people because it's the core concept.
And played with a broad.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So I'm going to try that out. I'd like to try that out with some folks sometime soon. But Forbidden Island is pretty solid as a board game on the iPad. And I played on my Mini, and it's still functional. Awesome. So, yeah. So, Matt, what's going on with you, man? You've been traveling about.
Yeah, I'm actually back in Florida right now for 2 weeks.
What?
And then I'm off to the Northeast with a puking and shitting cat. Should be great.
Yay!
Hooray!
So I left PAX, got on my bus, and then took an 8-hour bus ride that usually only takes 4 to get home.
What happened?
So there was it's sad. There was a really bad wreck on the, I think, 84 or something
really?
Connecticut. Yeah. But it was backed up for miles. I mean, miles. We sat basically not moving for about 3 hours in traffic.
Yikes.
Yeah. So I got to play a lot of games on my iPad, though.
Wow.
I bet you did.
I actually played until my iPad died, charged it back up with my battery charger thing, and then played it again until it died. Like, all I was trying to do was have my phone have enough battery power that I could, like, get Uber or something when I got to New York if I couldn't get a cab.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily everything survived. It was totally fine. But I played a ton of FTL on the iPad. I've been absolutely playing the crap out of that game. I've come really close to beating it on easy twice now. I still haven't beat it. But I got really, really, really close to beating it a couple of times.
So let me ask you a question. I think we all own the game on Steam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does it warrant a separate purchase to get it on the iPad? Because I think that's a question a lot of people might have.
My answer to that would be if you like to play games sitting on the couch or on a train or on a bus or, you know, basically not at your computer, then absolutely. Because it functions perfectly well and it is an absolute blast to play.
And like all of the touch controls are...
Yeah, solid. I would argue that much like Wolf Among Us for me, that I actually like the control better on the iPad than I do on the computer.
Oh, okay.
Because you're kind of like... Like, I don't think I ever realized it when I was playing the game on my computer, but it really is sort of a tactile game. Like, a lot of what you're doing, it almost feels like you're in the command, like, station of the ship, and you're, like, doing stuff and, like, ordering people around and, you know.
Can you still pause and everything, too? Like, all that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can still pause, and if you, like, go to do the doors, like, the game pauses while you're trying to do the doors.
That took
and, like,
me forever to figure out, by the way.
It did me, too.
I was like, what?
I think I said that, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I couldn't figure out how to close, like, specific doors, so you basically have to hit, like, the door button, and then you control all the doors.
Yeah, it takes a minute, but once you get the controls down, like on that, that's probably the hardest thing to understand for whatever reason. I did the same exact thing that you did. Like, I was like, how do I close one door?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I thought I had to upgrade it. Like, I was like, maybe you have to upgrade them now. And then you don't at all. But, so I played the living hell out of FTL, and yeah, I would, I mean, like, unless you're married to your computer or you like really love gaming with a mouse and keyboard on this game, mm-hmm. like it works really well on the iPad and is a lot of fun on the iPad. So
sweet.
Yeah, it looks really good too.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's still the same kind of like lo-fi graphics thing and the music's good and, you know, you can kind of like get your headphones on and really like just zone out and play for a while.
Sweet.
I also got Hitman Go, beat the first board. I just really love it. Like, I feel like this game's going to get overlooked, and it really is a fun, like, puzzly board game sort of for the iPad. Like, it's a really easy time killer to just, like, sit and play a round or two. You know what I mean? Like, it's not so in-depth.
Reasonable price, too.
Yeah, I think it was at $5.
Yeah, most Square Enix titles are, like, priced at regular retail, like, $15 to $20, even for the iPad. You know, this game's only like $4 or $5.
And I thought it was really cool, the approach. It really seems like they were like, hey, let's just make a game for the iPad and not like, let's port a title to the iPad. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's make an iPad game and then make it make sense inside of this other world. And like, really what makes it Hitman at the end of the day is like some of the music when you go to do like your main target hits and some of the strategy about like how to get around and distract people. But the actual gameplay is not, it's nothing like Hitman. It's really just a puzzle game. But
yeah,
it's cool. But it's super fun, looks gorgeous. I had an absolute blast playing that game. And but yeah, so a lot of FTL, a little bit of Hitman Go. I too downloaded Hearthstone, but I was without internet after I got it. I didn't really get a chance to play yet. So I'm going to try that probably this weekend. And then I fired up Thief this morning.
You got it on sale, right?
Yeah, I got it on sale for the Xbox One, and, you know, looks good. Looks like Thief. I don't really... Maybe that's why nobody really, like, freaked out. Like, I think in concept, you're like, yeah, another Thief game, and then you start playing, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's another Thief game. Like, it just kind of plays and looks like Thief. But, yeah. What else? I've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones.
Nice.
How far are you now?
Into Season 2, right?
Yeah, I'm in Season 2. I'm almost done with Season 2.
Cool.
It's you know, I mean, it's good. It's not a bad show. I think I still have like kind of the same opinion. Like, it's a good show, but it's, I don't know if it's as freak out worthy as everybody. I think HBO is really good at the hype machine, and I think they know how to like hype shows up well, and I think they take very regular concepts and make people freak out about them because it's HBO, if you will, you know what I mean?
It's like, also become a social event now as well, like, you know, like The Walking Dead is, like Lost used to be for some people,
right?
Yeah.
Breaking Bad, all that stuff.
Yeah,
like it's not, it's a very good show, and it's done, it's, I mean, it's a gorgeous show, and got like, I mean, you, when you're watching it, you forget that they did not actually have cameras in some fake olden times that never existed.
It's kind of true. Like, you don't even, like, you think Westeros is like a real place after a while, mm-hmm. because it's shot so well and the locations are so different from what you're used to seeing.
Yeah.
So it is really cool just to look at.
And even the effects are like good enough that you don't even think of them. Like, you know, dragons are not actually there.
Oh, okay.
What?
I mean, they're not actually chopping people's heads off. Like, they're not killing extras all over the place just to like, you know, pull off an effect. So it's good. I'm enjoying it, but I don't, you know, maybe just because I'm so far behind and the hype is like not there with me. Like, I'm not part of the,
you're just kind of watching the show.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying it, I guess. But that's good. And yeah, I think that's been about everything. Been a lot of couch sleeping for me and kind of backing and forthing and getting ready to do the old move, so that's probably about it at this point.
Awesome.
But you guys want to get into some of these interviews?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So we are going to run through the interviews. Last year we did a bunch of interviews just like this on the floor. We kind of edited it all into one episode with our talking, you know, recaps of the day and such. Uh-huh. And we really didn't feel like it fit. Like, we kind of jammed them in there. So this time, we're just bringing you all the interviews. And we've got from Devolver, we've got Broforce. From Clay, we've got Invisible Ink. We've got Secret Ponchos. Tumblestone from the guys who brought The Bridge, right? Was that the
yep,
name of
yep,
it?
Yep, correct. Yep.
State of Decay, one of our favorites out there. And then probably Ash's new favorite, a game called Darkest Dungeon from a developer up in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So let's kick it off. The first one was Broforce, right?
Yeah, so I didn't really know what Broforce was going to be about. I had seen some screens and I'd heard some buzz about Broforce that it was just kind of funny and ridiculous. And of course, with a name like Broforce, you're kind of expecting ridiculousness. But I absolutely ended up falling in love with Broforce because it's not unlike Contra in that it's just like a kind of a run and gun platformy shooter. But at the same time, it's so much more than that because there's just so much style and so much fucking total chaos when you play this game, which makes it so much fun. What did you guys think really quickly before we dive into it?
I really thought this was the kind of, like, you know, we're all on Xbox. We've got an hour to kill. We could jump on Broforce and play together because I'm not going to be around, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like a perfect pitch, sense of humor. I mean, when I read the description, when Devolver sent out stuff, I was like, okay, well, Broforce and Cosmic DJ are the two things I want to go see there. And it definitely paid off. Like, it's weird. These games are weird for me because it's weird to see it. It's not like a long player, but it was so much fun packed into like the 15, 20 minutes we played.
Yeah.
Like, we were laughing the whole time. It definitely see it as like just an awesome couch co-op or an awesome like network co-op with your friends just to run through and play.
Yeah. I when I got home, I realized that you could like basically pre-order the game and get an early access copy of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
So I actually played it for hours and hours and hours.
Pre-order, is it Steam pre-order?
Yeah. And it was absolutely awesome. So there are so many characters that I didn't get to play on the PAX show floor. The Terminator is absolutely ridiculous, or the Brominator, I guess he's called in this game. He can turn into like a T-100 version of himself and be invincible for a short while. And he has like a Gatling gun, and like Neo from the Matrix is there. And Bronan.
Is it Bro-Yo?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Bro-Yo. Bronan the Barbarian, Bro-Shetty. Basically, you get to play as all these iconic action and science fiction characters all in the same game in a very random way.
So did you enjoy the single player as much as
It was so much fun. Absolutely so much fun. With multiplayer would probably be even better, but I was absolutely addicted to playing the single player just because I wanted to see who I could unlock. And there actually is a lot to the game in terms of your strategy and how you take down rooms of enemies. And and you have to be careful because the walls and the floors and everything's destructible, right? So you can get crushed if you're not too careful. If you try and be like overly destructive, you can like, you know, burn a hole in the map that you can't get out of. So
it did seem pretty hard. Like, that's why I was wondering if single player was still fun, because the element of the multiplayer is that you can rescue your friend and regen and stuff like that. And in single player, it looks like you just die, right?
Yeah, you get hit with one bullet and you're gone. So it's pretty rough. I mean, it's just like Contra. I mean, Contra, you hit it once and you're dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're constantly dying. But you get pretty good, just like you did at Contra, avoiding bullets and learning enemy patterns. And it's just a total blast. Definitely recommend Broforce. And here you go. Check out our interview with Rowan Rothman, who is one of the South African developers at Free Lives who worked on Broforce.
Well, welcome. We just got done playing Broforce, and it was amazingly awesome. You said this is your first con, your first big con, right?
Yeah, first con. I never even went to one as a consumer, and here I am showing game.
That is so awesome. So tell us your name and what you're here representing, and a little bit about Broforce.
My name is Rowan Rothman. I work for Free Lives. We're representing Broforce, which I've just played. A tactical action platformer about being an action hero from the 80s and 90s.
Let's talk a little bit about the game itself, because we just got done, all three of us got done playing, and we were laughing hysterically because there are the playable characters are, I would say, icons of action cinema. So we saw Blade, we saw Rambo, we saw Commando, we saw Will Smith from B.A. Baracus from A-Team, Will Smith from Men in Black.
Yeah, you didn't even make it to RoboCop and Ellen Ripros and Robinator, Boondock Bros.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
So that's so cool. Tell us a little bit about where you guys got the idea for this game and kind of what inspired you to make it, because there's definitely elements of, I can feel like a little bit of Worms in it, I can feel a little bit of Contra.
Yeah.
You know, some of the old staples from like the 80s and 90s. So what did you grow up playing and what inspired you to make a game like this?
This was actually inspired by, well, first of all, Contra as an obvious inspiration.
Yeah.
And just like a lot of Flambeer influence into it, like Super Great Box with the bro switching, Infinite Swat is also a big influence.
Okay.
And just anything that's really explosive. Like,
yeah. Yeah. The level of destructibility makes the game really, really fun, because it seems like, yeah, rather than memorizing enemy patterns like you do in a game like this, the level of destructibility, it seems like it's going to be different almost every time depending on what hero you have and what weapon and like what weapons you're using. So how hard was that to design? Because you can take multiple paths. I mean, you can carve through the ground, right?
It's actually really important for us to give the player as much freedom as they can get and like have as much player agency in the game as we can possibly give them.
Yeah.
And then like to make it more replayable and make it feel fresh every time by switching up the bro so that you, like, no playthrough is the same. So, I mean, the catch is that you can screw yourself and mess up the level so badly that you can't finish it. But, you know, having the freedom to be able to do that, like, makes it worth it. Like, most of the time, like, you can still, because you can climb any wall and you can, like, you know, if it doesn't look like you can go this way, you just tunnel another way and find your own way through. So.
That's awesome. So, how did you guys come up with the title, Broforce?
Broforce, well, the game started out as a joke about Rambro and Rambo being a bro.
Yeah.
And it was initially even called Rambros. But,
Rambros.
There's another game. When we found out, there was another game. It was a pretty cool game, actually, called Rambros.
Okay.
Which already had the name before we even came up with it.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, brainstormed ideas, like, basically wrote a, like, laundry list of 300 words with
yeah.
in it. And then, like, Broforce is just the one that stuck the most.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, in terms of length and replayability, like, how long would it be? First of all, the game would be amazing to sit down with just a friend on the couch and just relax and play. So how long would you take to play through the game all the way?
With the current content that there is, it's about 2 hours if it's your first time playing it, just the campaign. We're looking to at least double it, but I'm hoping to have like about 6 to 8 hours is a good length for that kind of game.
Wow.
I'm not sure if we'll get that far, but probably like 5 to 6 hours.
Wow.
But the meat of the game is also in the local deathmatch, and there are other modes like a race mode and explosion run mode that are currently in the game. And we want to try put in as many local competitive modes as we can think of as well. Because that's where the game really shines. It's like on your couch with your buddies.
Yeah, absolutely.
A couple of beers, a couple of bros.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. So what are you guys doing in terms of like music and stuff like that? Are you developing it yourselves? Are you bringing in like an outside composer? Or?
We're working with a South African-based composer who's currently working on custom music for the game.
Oh, cool.
Because we're like very specific about the kind of music that we want, and it's hard to get it right. The music that's currently in isn't of his work yet, but it's we also want music that dynamically reacts to what's actually happening, so that you can hear like, okay, something's about to happen or something is happening, and make it more alive. And it needs the right level of like seriousness and the right level of cheese to like
absolutely get everything. Overly inspirational music all the time.
Yeah.
I need to talk about the high five mechanic, which you showed us, which is probably one of the coolest things I've seen in one of these games in a long time. Tell us how you guys thought of that and describe to the listeners what it is, because it's pretty amazing where you can actually high five each other in the game.
It was actually suggested by a fan rather early in development. They're like, how does this game not have a high five button? We realized, well, obviously it needs a high five button.
Yeah.
And then the next obvious thing to do is like make it go slow motion, because that's generally what happens when people high five. So,
yeah. That is very true. So, when you high five in the game, this is just for our listeners, the game briefly goes into slow motion, which is actually really helpful because there's a lot going on in the game. So that's really, really cool. How big is your team? Are you guys a big team?
We're currently a team of 8 people.
Eight people.
Not including music. And we might get a contract somebody in to do some sound as well.
Awesome. And what platforms are you guys aiming for right now?
PC first and foremost. We're on early access at the moment.
Okay.
And PlayStation 4, we're definitely aiming. And we'll see about Vita. If the game ports well to Vita, we'll probably release it there as well. And then depending on what Microsoft does, Xbox One as well.
Cool. Very, very cool. Awesome. So rough release window, any ideas yet?
No real idea. I think we're going to work on the game until we're happy with it rather than target a release date.
Awesome.
So it might still be a while, but hopefully not too long.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
So next up, we have one of, I know, Scott's probably soon to be favorites, and I've already pre-ordered the game and am super excited about it. And it's called Invisible Ink from Clay Games.
Yes.
Yeah. This game is incredible. My only regret was that I was so terrible at it on the show floor. but other than that, it was great. It was such a good experience. It scratches all the right itches for me. Tactical, retro themed, turn-based tactical espionage spy game. I kind of realized that what it does is it takes elements of traditional stealth games like a Thief or a Hitman, mm-hmm. and then it blends those with a tactical game like XCOM, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because all of the same stuff that you would do in a game like that is in a game like this, where it's like you need to be stealthy, you need to, you're not trying to get into combat, you're not superhuman, your characters are very squishy, and the whole idea is to neutralize people, not kill them, and stay out of trouble while, you know, breaking into these facilities, collecting intel, and then getting out unseen, that kind of stuff. So
super
that's,
cool.
Yeah, it makes it great.
Yeah, I love going to talk to Clay. Like, yeah. That studio, the stuff they make, I remember the first time I saw Don't Starve at PAX, it like literally blew my mind, and I'm always really eager to talk to them and see, you know, what they're cooking up. And we had seen Invisible Ink at PAX Prime, but
incognita.
It looks... Yeah, it was incognita then, and it looks so much better now. So even if you've kind of, like, if you're on the fence about it, definitely check out the new stuff about Invisible Ink. And
yeah. I was going to ask Scott, because I actually missed the playthrough. I was out buying batteries for us. But if you could, just for a minute, talk about... He said he upped the stealth and down the combat in the game. Like, what did you feel about the stealth element of it? Like, what was different? Or I know you don't know what was different, but like, how did it feel that you couldn't? Because we could actually get into gunfights when I played at Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Was it still like that, or did it seem like really like you're really not supposed to get into a gunfight here?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I bought the game pretty much after you guys told me about it from Prime, and then afterwards, I didn't play it because I knew that I would love it and I wanted the game to develop, and I didn't really. The first time I wanted to experience it, I wanted it to be sort of more complete. So right. I waited, and then when this interview came up at East, it was my first time playing it. And then I was so terrible at it that I was like, oh, man, I need to start practicing. So when I got back, I started playing the build that I had early access to on Steam. And, yeah, it's the idea is that you're not supposed to get into combat. The level, if you play through the training level, you're not even sent into the room with any weapons. You know, you acquired a weapon in the training level, but it was a dart gun so that you could knock people out from a distance but not kill them.
Wow.
And, that's kind of the idea, is just to stay out of combat. But it just works so good. It's got this mechanic where you can peek around corners so that you can reveal parts of the map without being detected. And then it's got this hacking mechanic that's kind of like reminds me of Gunpoint or, what's in Shadowrun. You're not actually running into the Matrix or whatever, but it's the same idea where there's kind of this alternate reality view. And, you know, you do all your hacking through that. But it's great. I'm
awesome.
I'm super stoked, and I can't wait to see how the game develops over time. I'm just really excited for it.
Cool. Well, here is our interview with Invisible Ink creators from Clay.
So let's go ahead and just say your name and what you did on the game, and then we'll go ahead and start talking.
Sure. My name is Jason Dreger, and I'm one of the designers of Invisible Ink.
Awesome. So we're here with Clay. You guys are one of our favorites to visit because we absolutely love your games. So we're just going to gush for a second. Play the heck out of Don't Starve. Play the heck out of Mark and the Ninja. Love it all. So we've been watching this game for a while, and I was talking to you while we were doing our playthrough. And we were talking a little bit about what changed from last year at Prime. What would you say to our listeners changed the most with Invisible Ink over the past, you know, 6-8 months?
Well, number one is just more content, more, well, we have different corporations now as opposed to the same generic corporation you're going into. It's more agents, more items you can use. But I think that the maybe actually more significant is we're really starting to focus more heavily on stealth. So as the design goes, we're changing the systems to really make the stealth much more stronger, and we're toning back the combat.
Okay, so you're moving away from, because it was, I wouldn't say it was combat heavy last time, yeah. But there was definitely, I remember Matt played, he drove last time, and we called in, like, at the end there were like 20 guards, and we're like running out of the building, and I remember you like, you know, taking pot shots to the guards and things like that. Yeah, we did really awful last time that we played the game. So now it's much more stealth heavy.
Yes.
Actually, Scott just drove and played the game, and he didn't get in any fights at all. Is that common now, would you say?
In the office, actually, we're trying a build where your characters don't even have health. They just, like, one hit will kill them.
Oh, wow.
But on top of that, we're even trying out that you don't start with a gun. That it really is about evading your enemy and sneaking around to do that you need to do.
So in terms of progression, every time you play this game, is it essentially a new adventure, or do you have a character that you save as you progress?
So each time you play the game, a complete session, like a winning session, we're targeting for around 3 hours to get.
Okay.
And in that session, you're going to have a team of agents you're going to start with. You may be able to find more agents that you can hire to go with you, and you'll sort of pay an upkeep for them, but generally okay. It's going to be around two or three that you're going to run with, and they will level up. They'll get levels, you'll augment them with new items. But then once you finish that game, whether for good or for ill, you'll be starting again with new agents.
Okay, that's excellent. Yeah. In terms of agents and their abilities, how do they vary? Like, what sort of different abilities and such do they have?
Right. So each of the agents is a special character. It's not really classes, but each agent has like a set of skills that they can level up in, and some of those skills overlap. But for example, there's engineers who have wireless emitters who can hijack easier than other characters. You have characters that are really into stealth, so their movement is more silent than other characters.
Yeah.
And there's sharpshooters who do have the ability to use higher tier weapons.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Cool. Do you guys have any particular questions? Because I know you just played it for the first time, really.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, I bought the game basically sight unseen because I love the content. Can you talk a little bit about the music? Because I know that the package I bought is eventually going to come with a soundtrack, and what I heard sounded amazing just in the trailer alone. So what, as far as like the aesthetics go in terms of the music and the art style, like what was your inspiration for that kind of stuff?
Right. So the, one of the sort of art styles we're working on is, what if the 60s had been carried into a cyberpunk future? So,
that's like really, his dream.
Yeah. It's got this cloak and dagger 60s spy movie aesthetic, but it's also got this like cyberpunk hacking layer on top of it.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So what were some of your, when you guys were making this, did you play a lot of stealth games growing up? Like, is that like your bread and butter in particular? Like, what are your favorite things? Like, what are you playing now? Let's ask that question. If you have time to play anything.
Yeah, so what I'm playing right now is the new FTL, the expansion for FTL. Yeah.
Just played it on the plane. It's so good. Yeah.
So, I mean, I played the hell out of it before, now I'm just playing more of it. And there's definitely some influence of like, that, it's a term I've heard coined recently, the procedural death labyrinth.
Yeah, of course.
FTL is not quite the same as that, but so that is what, you know, what we're working with.
Let me ask you this. We're just going to talk about FTL for a second here.
Yeah.
Totally just jump the tracks.
Sure.
But have you beaten the boss as a designer? Have you actually gotten past the boss?
Oh, yeah. I've beaten normal a few times.
You're like one of the only people I've ever met that has said yes to that.
Well,
you should feel pretty good about yourself.
I think I was like 150 hours when I beat it the first time.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Because I'm still...
Normal.
Holy!
Yeah.
We're in awe of you right now. You're like, yeah, this is amazing. But anyway...
If you want a hint...
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I beat it on easy first using the Engie ship. That was like, I don't know, like the first time I did that.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you beat it first on easy, you'll unlock the second human ship, or it's like a white battlecruiser.
Yeah.
It has a special weapon that it's a laser beam that charges up, and it shoots through all the shields. Like, it just avoids shields.
Oh.
So if once you get that ship, try playing it with that. I think it's pretty strong.
It. Okay.
Yeah,
so
the first time I beat it on normal was
with
that.
Also off the rails, have you tried Out There yet?
No, I haven't played Out There.
Okay, so that's, I think, one row over in the Mega Booth. You, sir, will love it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's Miklos, a French studio, two guys.
Yeah.
It is really...
It's a non-combat FTL.
Yes. I know it. You'll really like it.
Back to your game.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're here to talk about. Yeah, let's talk about this. Yeah, so how long have you guys been working on Invisible Ink, and how big is your team, and basically just the gears that make up this game?
Yeah. So, I mean, we had a fairly long pre-production where we were trying a bunch of different stuff. Almost a year, maybe, but
yeah.
So now we've been working on it for about a year with like the actual construction of the game now. We are looking to go to beta soon, although we really want to make sure that we get the stealth right. So as I was saying, we're in the office right now, we're trying things like, you know, no weapons and one-shot kills. So once we feel like we've got that right, then we'll be starting in the open beta.
Excellent.
And that will be on Steam. And the plan is to have it launch sometime at the end of this year.
So you guys have basically an alpha now for people that pre-purchased the game.
That's right.
Is the community essentially helping you with some of the things that they're
looking
at feedback and such?
As the feedback we get on the forums, it's like, I think most of them must be designers themselves.
Yeah.
The feedback we get is insanely good. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Most of the feedback we get is just like horrible dick jokes and stuff. So you guys probably are working with designers. Yeah. Well, awesome. What's the release window looking like?
So beta in a couple of months. And then we'll launch the game sometime at the end of the year, October, November, something like that.
Awesome. And where can people find you guys on social media and such?
You can go to clayentertainment.com, the forums, forums.clayentertainment.com. Okay. You can go to invisibleinkgame.com. There's a Humble widget there that you can get into the alpha.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks. Yeah.
So next up, we went to a sort of favorite developer of ours. We've played this game a bunch of times, and the game is Secret Ponchos.
Yeah, this is actually our third time checking out Secret Ponchos at PAX, and it's been cool to see the progression in the game. And when I walked by this time, I was kind of shocked because it looks like a completely different game.
Yeah.
One of the things we talk about in our interview with Youssef is the fact that the game was being developed for the PS3 originally, and then stuff happened and the game was almost done, and Sony felt like it'd be a good fit for the PlayStation 4, and so they basically started the game all over again and rebuilt it for the PS4. So visually it's pretty awesome. And if you haven't seen Secret Ponchos, it's kind of they don't really make games like it anymore. It's something that like you would have played a long time ago with your friends on the couch, you know, for maybe the N64 or the, you know, or even the Sega Genesis, right? So it's a top-down shooter, class-based shooter, and it's a spaghetti western style. So each one of the characters has its own set of abilities.
Yeah.
And you kind of run around and try and take each other out. But there's a lot of skill to it, too, which is really, really fun. And visually, I just absolutely love the style of this game. That's what always drew me to it. It looks really cool. It looks unlike anything I've really seen on the show floor. So I've always been kind of drawn to it. So did you guys get a chance to play it this time around?
Yeah. So this is my second time playing it. The first time I think you was East and you played and told us about it, but I don't think either one. I don't know if Scott made it over, but I didn't make it over to play. And then I played at Prime, and again now. And honestly, like the biggest change that we can talk about is weird because it's not something easily describable, which is that the game is gorgeous now. It's much better looking on the PS4 engine than it was. Not that it was bad looking at all on the other one, but it just like the effects and the, you know, just little details in the scenery and how your player moves and stuff is just so smooth and so nice looking that that's probably the biggest upgrade that I noticed. And then the new character classes, we got to play one called the Matador, which is really cool. And you know, but yeah, it was awesome. I enjoyed it.
It's cool. It's kind of like taking the elements of a shooter and mixing them with a fighting game, because each character class has different combos they can pull off and stuff. And I can just see, you know, a bunch of friends sitting around, again, playing for a couple hours, you know, over the internet and just like laughing hysterically or doing couch co-op and having a ton of fun killing each other. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So check out our interview with Youssef Mapra from Switchblade Monkeys.
All right, so go ahead and give your name and what you're working on and your position on the team.
Yusuf Mapara. I'm the creative director of Secret Ponchos.
Awesome. Well, it's awesome to see you again. We first met last year. We kind of stumbled across this game last year, and I've been keeping track of it because it was one of my big surprises last year. I really love the aesthetic of it. I love the way it played. I love the idea of sitting down with my friends on the couch and running around and shooting each other. And I feel like I used to play games like this a lot when I was younger, but there's really nothing like Secret Ponchos that's out right now. So can you tell us a little bit about the process? Because you guys have been in development for a while now.
So we started out not as a kind of a creative, not as a commercial venture, but we just wanted to make a game that was fun and had that addictive competitive gameplay.
Yeah.
And it was just a group of friends making a game. We showed it for the first time when you saw it at PAX, yeah. PAX East last year. Yeah. We didn't know if anyone would like it, but it turned out people really responded well. And Sony picked it up then and asked us to bring it to PS4.
That's cool.
At that point, we've been developing for 3 years. So the last year has been really exciting for us. We just disappeared from the media. We put our heads down and we've been rebuilding the game in a new engine to really take advantage of the PS4 and make it a solid product.
Awesome.
From that.
Awesome. So it looks absolutely gorgeous now. What did you guys have to do to optimize it to basically be on the, because it was, you were making it for PS3, and then you once you got wind, I heard that PS4 was about to come out, they actually granted you a little bit more time to work on it and optimize it. So what did you actually have to do to make the game look and feel a little bit different?
Well, we decided for a online fighting game, it needed to be 60 frames per second.
Okay.
And because PS4 can support 1080, we wanted to try and push that resolution too. So we actually, it wasn't maybe the best financial decision for us, but we decided to just rebuild the game in a new engine that was a faster language, and it was Sony's proprietary technology, so it would work really well with the PS4.
Yeah.
So doing that, we were able to get the performance out. So you're seeing, you know, 8-player split screen, so 16 characters running around at 60 frames per second. We also used a new lighting engine, the Enlighten rendering engine. That's the one they use for Battlefield. It's a beautiful lighting engine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we just actually up-resed all of our characters and our environments and just kind of, you know, I think pretty soon we're going to post the before and after kind of makeover to give people an idea.
Yeah.
But now when the camera zooms in close to the characters, you'll see a lot more detail and they just, you know, the nice normals, and it's just more exciting for us to look at the visuals.
Yeah, absolutely. So for someone who hasn't gotten a chance to come to one of these shows and actually play Secret Ponchos, what is the appeal of a game like this? And maybe how is this game different than anything else that really exists right now? Because I know what the answer is, but I don't know if our listeners do. So,
you know, I think that it's kind of weird, but when you look at team shooters or shooting games, nobody ever put the camera up top, you know, in a competitive one. And when you're in a normal first person or third person, the gameplay is really about pointing the camera at the right spot and shooting, right?
Yeah.
Our gameplay is not about that. It's about you see everyone around you, but it's about choosing how you position your spacing and your timing to attack them and or to escape, you know? Mm-hmm. So it plays more like a fighting game.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a new breed of combat game. It might look like a team shooter and have some of that appeal, but we draw a lot of inspiration from fighting games like Soul Calibur. And
it's funny that you mentioned that because I can totally see, I was like an arcade rat when I was a kid. I lived in arcades. So I could see this game having a giant cabinet and a bunch of people standing around playing this in an arcade setting, plopping down their quarters on the machine and just like, you know, challenging each other. So I think I agree with you. I mean, it definitely is one of those, it has more of a feel of a fighting game than anything that I played recently, you know, anything that is in the genre of a shooter. So it's cool. I like it. So what in terms of the, what separates the characters from one another? Because the design's really appealing, but how are the characters all different from one another?
We really tried to create the characters mechanically very different from each other.
Yeah.
So that they're not just superficial or aesthetic changes. So one character might be really fast and fluid, and you can miss a lot with him, but it doesn't matter because he's gotten more shots, like Kid Red, right?
Yeah.
Another character might be very weak. If you miss a shot, you're going to be punished for it. But if you can land with precision, you might stun the guy and then be able to set up your next attack. So that might be for somebody who's a little bit more methodical and more precise.
Okay.
Another character, like Matador we just added, she's almost like, you want to lay traps 3 moves in advance, so you might, if you go head to head with somebody, you'll die.
Yeah.
But if you throw a spear in them, they might get slow, and then you throw the second spear, they might get even slower. You can pull out the sword and do a lunge execution move, and it'll be an insta kill.
Oh wow!
So
there's a lot of little tricks with each character I've noticed, like just from playing it on the floor over the years. I'm like, oh, if you do this and then you do this, I know the What's the Union soldier? What's his name?
The deserter.
Yeah. With him, you can do a bayonet charge, and you can stab them with the bayonet, and then you can actually fire the gun while they're stabbed with the bayonet and do extra damage, which is really cool. So most of the characters actually have, like, a little, basically, finesse moves that you can do with them.
Yeah, you know, we try to make them a solid set of foundation. Like, so just running around, shooting, reloading, taking cover, dodging, those are the basics. Making sure that people can have fun with those. But, so then they're playing the game, they're having that addictive fun, but then we want people to be able to get good over a year or 2 years of playing the game,
yeah,
and not just be spammy, so we added a lot of depth to each character.
Excellent, cool. So currently you guys have five characters that I think you said you were going to ship with.
Yep.
And you have intentions of adding more as the game goes on and on and on?
Yeah, you know, we have so many cool archetypes we want to add, and we found that a good use of DLC might be just continually expanding the roster.
Yeah.
So we're not the kind of game where you buy it and where you have to keep buying little things just to play. Like, we're not, you know, we want you to have a complete experience with the base package, but we want to use DLC just as a chance for us to keep expanding the game and using that to fund new development of characters.
Awesome. Have you guys announced any new game modes or anything, or what are you guys looking at?
Yeah, we have Domination mode, which was a new one since PAX East last year.
Okay.
So that's like a tug of war where one team is trying to get five more kills than the other team in 4v4.
Okay.
You know, the one-on-one mode and that mode is very technical because once you die in the round, you're dead.
Yeah.
So, but that one you've seen before, I think.
Yeah.
And the free-for-all, after launch, we're actually looking to expand the game to add AI hordes, that kind of stuff.
I was just going to ask you that, but I didn't want to put you on the spot because I was thinking how amazing it would be to sit around with friends and go against increasingly hard waves of enemies, being able to utilize all the skills of all the different characters and get really tactical. And I wouldn't say, like, not necessarily like a tower defense style, but I think there's a lot of room for that in this game because there are so many different abilities. You know, you said you were adding, you added health to a character because to make them more tanky.
Yeah.
That just got my nerd brain thinking. I was like, oh, like, you could actually make this into like a, you know, rather than just a competitive title, you could make it into a cooperative title as well, which is really cool.
So, you know, it's interesting because we have a certain amount of time until the game launches.
Yeah.
And we have a bunch of content that we've been R&Ding, like AI and stuff. What we decided to do with the time from now to launch is invest all the time just into balancing and polishing the multiplayer, but then post-launch we'll start developing more of the AI stuff. And the good thing with games nowadays is you don't just buy the disc and you're done. We can actually make it a perpetual development where we keep patching in new modes and the game 1 year from now might have a lot more stuff than it does now, and it'll keep the user group kind of invested in the game and having fun.
Cool, very cool. So what's your release window right now?
So we're going to launch in fall on the PSN.
Okay.
It's going to be a PlayStation Plus game, but we're pushing really hard to get it in beta, in a public beta.
Okay.
Where like a community-based beta where people can play it and give us feedback and we can learn from them instead of just private QA and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to be doing that 6 to 8 weeks from now on early access.
Oh, good.
And then all that polish is going to make the game better, so when it launches on PSN, you know, they're going to have all that polish, and on top of it, we're going to have a PC version come out of it.
Oh, cool. So very cool. And where can people find you on the internet and social media and stuff, just for our listeners to find you guys?
SwitchbladeMKYS is our Twitter.
Okay.
We use Facebook a lot to deal with our community.
Okay.
So Secret Ponchos is our Facebook thing.
Excellent.
And then the best thing to do is sign up on our website for our mailing list, you know?
Cool.
But any of those three outlets, you'll get updates about the early access.
Awesome. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
See you later.
So next up, we played what I like to refer to as Scott Crack. That is the game called Tumblestone. So Scott, if you want to kind of describe what this game is.
Yeah, Tumblestone, and he describes it as well, Ty. He was one of the creators of The Bridge, which is sort of like a mind-melting game based on M.C. Escher drawings. So I think that this time around, he wanted to do something a little more colorful, as he describes. So Tumblestone is in the match 3 genre, But he tries to make it a little more accessible for local multiplayer. So it's a fun game where the stakes are not super high. It's meant to be something that's you know, played with friends, low stress. It's a very simple mechanic to learn, but something that you can, you know, difficult to master as you sort of understand how the game works. And it's weird because the game is so simple to see, but there's like so much under the hood. And the part that we played was like a 4-player match 3, kind of reminded me of Tetris Attack, and it's something that we brought up in the interview.
Reminded me of what was the with the Street Fighter characters.
Puzzle Fighter, totally, something like that.
Puzzle Fighters.
Yeah, it reminded me of Puzzle Fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's
Pokemon,
that's
Puzzle accurate. League.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, that's kind of what Tumblestone's all about. And
To be honest, just to add a little bit more, I'm horrible at puzzle games, and normally I don't play them, but they like basically threw a controller in my hand and were like, come on, and I was like, all right. And the three of us were playing at the same time, because you can actually play 4-player on the same screen, which is really cool. And the thing that made it fun for me is even if I lost, it basically just resets and you get to keep going. Yeah. So it's how many times you beat your opponent, and your opponent isn't out when they actually lose the match, which can create this kind of like, you could play for, you know, a half an hour straight, I'm assuming, if you set the match to be long enough, and people can just keep going and rack up wins. But there's no down and out, which I thought was really cool. And it made it so I actually wanted to keep on going.
It was also a battle right. So like if Scott and I were better than you, we couldn't both pile on to you. Like basically you fight the guy on your right and the guy from your left is piling onto you.
Yeah.
So you're just always playing like in that kind of circular motion. But it was fun.
No, it was really cool. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So let's give a listen to our talk with Ty for Tumblestone. So we're here in the Indie Mini booth, and we're talking about Tumblestone. For our listeners, tell us who you are, and tell us a little bit about the game.
I'm Ty Taylor. You may previously remember me as the creator of The Bridge, and I'm here today with Tumblestone, which is, I think of it as a reinvention of Match 3. It's a competitive multiplayer game, which kind of throws away the conventions that Match 3 sets up. You know, you'll play Bejeweled or Candy Crush or something like that, and you have these infinite pieces coming down chaotically, you know, doing things you didn't intend. And, you know, likewise, a lot of Match 3 games have you connect a lot more than three in a row. So
right.
Tumblestone kind of throws these things out and reinvents the genre in a game formula that really works for a lot of fun. As you just
So we're here on the mini booth floor. And there's a 4-player game set up right now, a crowd of people playing. What made you decide to go from something like The Bridge to something like in the more traditional like puzzle sense?
Well, after working on The Bridge for 3 years, I really wanted to work on something else.
Yeah.
You'll notice this game has a lot more color, for example.
Yeah, The Bridge kind of turned my brain inside out like as I was trying to play it.
This is much more relaxed. Especially the local multiplayer uses a lot less brain power, but in a really good way. It's more of the classical definition of fun that you'll find in video games, where I think The Bridges and other puzzle games like that is plenty of fun, but in its own kind of way, where you're like, you get this aha moment. But here, you're so close to the bottom, you're racing the clock, you're like, oh, I got these three, and like, you're like, oh crap, but you're smiling when you lose, and it's that kind of traditional fun that I really wanted to make with this game.
Yeah, were there any previous puzzle games in particular that sort of inspired you? Like for me, like I played a lot of Tetris Attack on the Super Nintendo. Oh, did you really?
Yeah. Like the modern maybe Tetris Splash on the Xbox 360 is what I play, but it's the same thing.
Yeah. Or like Pokemon Puzzle League is what it was on the N64.
And Dr. Mario. You know, Hexic 2 has a great multiplayer on Xbox 360, and so I love those kind of games. I play them all the time with my girlfriend. It's like our go-to games at home is to play these local multiplayer games, but casual local multiplayer games. Mm-hmm. So, like, not Nidhogg or not Samurai Gun, because those are, like, you know, those are too hardcore to play with someone who's not really as into video games in the traditional sense. But, you know, games like Hectic 2 or Tetris Splash or any of these games, these are games that you can, you know, chill out with someone who just loves these casual games and have a good time and be evenly matched with.
Yeah.
And so that's what I wanted to do with Tumblestone.
That's like a good point that you emphasize there, too, is that, like, it sounds like you took the approach of wanting it to be multiplayer first.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of these games, like, have single-player components, and that's really where the meat of the game is, like something like Tetris or whatever.
I feel like the meat of Tumblestone is actually the local multiplayer.
Yeah.
Sitting along, you know, like you just experienced, you're sitting on a couch at home with your friends on your console. That's where it's really going to shine. We do, of course, have single-player modes, but yeah. I really think multiplayer shines in it.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, you know, like you said, it's casual in the sense that when you lose, like when your row fills up, you don't get like super angry about it. It's just like, oh, that was cool. Like you got me, and like
you want to play again, and yeah, then again, and then again.
Want to get right back into it. How big is the team now for the bridge? It was really just you, and then you had an artist as well, yeah, right?
It's the same artist for the bridge, working on Tumblestone, but we have two more people. You just met Alex and Justin. They're the software engineers on the game,
mm-hmm.
And so it's just the four of us.
Cool. It's another question we like to ask people since we're here at PAX and tons of stuff around here. What are you playing right now? Like, in terms of, you know, when you're not working on your game, what do you have time to play? What do you enjoy playing?
I think I just said, like, Hectic 2 is one of my go-to games. I love casual local multiplayer. My girlfriend and I sit around on our Xbox all day playing together because anytime I'm playing a game, she wants to play too. So it's Hectic 2, Ticket to Ride, Tetris Splash, Battle Block Theater. It's just general, like, casual local multiplayer games like that.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So when can our listeners expect to get this? How do they get the game? When do you plan to put it out?
It'll be out at either the end of the year or early next year, mm-hmm. to be determined. But it'll be on Steam, consoles, tablets. You can find it anywhere. It's actually, there's a Steam page now if you want to add it to your wish list. Or we have a email on our email list on our website for a reminder.
Awesome. And where can people find you directly if they want to get in touch with you?
All of my contact information is on tumblestonegame.com.
And then you're expecting, like you said, just about every platform you can get it to. It's going to be pretty.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck with the release.
So this next one, you guys, we split, which we didn't do very much on the floor this week, or this past weekend, but we split up. I stayed at Devolver, played Cosmic DJ and a couple other games, and you guys went over and checked out State of Decay.
Yeah, so State of Decay has been out for a while now, but they were there showing off their Lifeline DLC. And, you know, just if anyone hasn't played State of Decay yet, it's on PC, and of course you can get it on Xbox. And they actually just, Undead Labs just signed a contract with Microsoft, so they're working on something big for Microsoft now, which they haven't really revealed yet. But this game is like one of the secret gems of last year for me because I picked it up not knowing what really it was. I knew it was like a budget title for Xbox Live, and I played it so much that like I for like a couple days straight I was just obsessed with this game until I beat it, because it's a survival horror game. It has permadeath. You can rescue other survivors, and basically you're trying to survive the zombie apocalypse inside this town by foraging for food and foraging for, you know, items and goods. And the stakes get harder and harder and harder, and it basically is just a really harrowing, scary experience. I really thought it was great. And so when I saw that Undead Labs was coming out with a new piece of DLC where you play from the military perspective, I thought, well, that could be incredibly cool. So we went over there and talked to them about what this DLC has to offer and maybe some things about the future of the franchise. So check out our chat with State of Decay.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the latest from State of Decay and Undead Labs and what you do on the game and your name and basically just the whole rundown.
Okay, well, my name is Jeffrey Card. I'm the lead designer on the DLC for State of Decay. I designed Breakdown, and actually, it doesn't sound right for me to say I designed it, because honestly, the culture we have at Undead Labs,
yeah,
pretty much everybody is involved in the design to some degree or another.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of I don't know, team-based kind of experience.
Yeah,
I mean, all the guys that you see here at the show were involved to some degree or another. and figuring out what this DLC was going to be.
Yeah.
So we did Breakdown. We're doing Lifeline now, which is our first big story expansion.
Okay.
So basically we've got a brand new map, the city of Danforth. We got a brand new set of characters, this military unit called Greyhound 1, and a new set of missions, a new story. Basically, you've been sent in to Danforth to rescue as many civilians as you possibly can, but particularly high-value civilians, people who have scientific knowledge, who have political connections, who have things that could, you know, that could actually help the military fight off this outbreak. Mm-hmm. So you're sent in, you've got all this firepower, you've got everything you could possibly want. You've got, you know, airstrikes you can call in, you've got high-end military hardware, military vehicles, and eventually things start breaking down.
Yeah.
And the question is, can you, as the commanding officer of this unit, keep things together, build an outpost that can survive, and accomplish your mission, even as things are all decaying around you?
It's an interesting angle, because I don't think I've played a game from the perspective, because the military always loses in the zombie apocalypse. It's just what happens. But actually getting to see them lose is a whole new perspective. So I'm kind of actually pretty eager to see that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I find that, a lot of times, you know, the military kind of becomes sort of the go-to bad guy in a lot of video games. It's like people feel like they're being very clever. It's like, oh, wait, no, the military?
Yeah.
Secretly, they're the bad guys.
Yeah, and it happens in every film.
It happens in every single film, every single game. And we're like, you know what? A lot of we've got guys on our team who actually were in the military.
Yeah.
They know what it's like to be a soldier. And they know that, you know, these guys, they're not these, like, you know, oh, I'm a hammer and every problem's a nail. I'm just going to go in and shoot everything. And, there might be a weirdo here and there. But, you know, the attitude of a soldier is much more about, let's go in there and let's help these civilians. Let's win some hearts and minds. Let's, you know, there's a lot more to the philosophy than that. So we kind of wanted to make a game where, you know, military people would actually play this and feel like, you know, you didn't get every single detail right, but you captured the meaning of what it means to be in this situation.
So for our listeners who maybe have never played State of Decay before, what separates your game from the other zombie games out there? What makes State of Decay? First of all, I've played it. I love it. I think it's great. I was glued to it because I was afraid when I was playing it, because everything kind of evolves in real time.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, I'm like, I can't go anywhere for a while. Like, somebody might die. This character I really like might go off on their own and do something crazy. I'm like, I'm not leaving for a couple days until I get through this. So what separates State of Decay from the other games out there?
Well, I feel like, you know, most zombie games out there are about, and even most zombie movies, are about the moment when the zombies attack. They're about that time, you know, zombies are flooding into the room. You're trying to get as many headshots as you can. You're trying to run away. You're trying to do whatever your character's capable of doing.
Uh-huh.
But it's about that hectic moment, that exciting, you know, like, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
That we've got that in our game. But the game is actually a lot more like you'd say, like what I think people are looking for from, say, The Walking Dead, where, you know, The Walking Dead, it's not just about that moment when the zombies attack. It's about what happens afterwards. It's
absolutely.
Like, you know, we survived the initial attack. We're alive now. Now what do we do?
Uh-huh.
It's not like, you know, my kids are going to go to college now. It's not I'm going to, you know, going to go to my job every day.
Yeah.
What is life about now?
Yeah.
And that's about toilets.
I know. Right. Build porta potties.
Yeah, so that's what State of Decay is largely about. Yeah. It's about, you know, survive the zombies, but then also just survival.
Yeah. And that permadeath is absolutely terrifying.
Oh, I know.
You could not program scary moments like that into a game if they were pre-scripted or anything like that, because you build such relationships with those characters and you level them up and you gear them up, and then you just have like a bad moment, like someone comes to your front door or something, and you come back and like your favorite character is like, you know, getting eaten, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I joined the team specifically to design the DLC, and so I actually played State of Decay as a player.
Oh, awesome.
For the first time. So for me, the defining moment of the game was when, you know, I've been playing as Marcus for quite some time.
Yeah, me too.
And then, you know, I take him, I'm headed up the hill towards the Wilkerson house.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, let me stop off and scavenge a little bit in this house.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly a feral just comes out of nowhere and murders Marcus.
Oh no.
Just out of nowhere. And I was just like, at first I was just like dumbfounded and like my jaw was hanging over.
Yeah, you want to jump up and like turn the Xbox off or like, you know, figure out some way to reverse time, but there's no way.
And then I'm just back and now I'm Ed.
Yeah.
And now I have to make my tearful journey up the hill to go and rescue my best friend's rucksack and bring it back to remember him by.
Yeah.
And I was like, at that moment the game changed for me. It became, you know, like, oh, now I know what game I'm playing.
Yes.
I'm playing a game where it's not just about the story of this hero restarting as many times as he wants to try to get to the,
you
know.
No, it's serious business, this game, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I remember, not to just go off on a tangent about State of Decay stories.
I love tangents.
But I remember having to go back to the camp. You have to go back at some point during the story. and all my characters were injured, so I went back with like a D-tier member of my party. And when you go back, it's not the same as it was the first time.
Oh yeah, I know. It's like infested with zombies.
Yeah,
oh yeah.
Yeah,
crazy.
It was so much fun. But so when are you guys thinking of putting this out, and what platforms and such?
Well, it's going to come out simultaneously for PC and Xbox 360, so you'll get on Xbox Live Arcade or on Steam.
Okay.
And it's going to be early June.
Early June, awesome.
Yeah.
Any chance for a version coming to the One at all?
We'll have to talk
later.
Okay,
yeah, I got you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. All right.
So the next interview we've got is with the developers at Miklos for the game Out There, which we have talked about in depth many times on this podcast, and I think gotten many people to play, thankfully, because
yeah,
it is a great game. But Out There is a sort of roguelike space resource management game, I guess is the best way to put it.
It's really a hard game to explain. I mean, you're exploring, you're trying to survive.
Yeah.
It's like a choose your own adventure, but no combat.
Yeah.
Yeah, no combat. There's a lot of just randomness to it. And they kind of talked about the fact that there's no combat, and that was one of the goals, was to make this a very, very much about exploration, very much about resource management, but not in like a tedious way. Yeah, the guys were so sweet. This is their first con, right? Is that what they said?
Absolutely, yeah.
And then they were like really shy about, because they have accents because they're French, but they're not, like, they're barely accents. And then on top of that, like, I think Ash joked, they speak way better English than we do French.
Yeah,
by any
absolutely.
Means.
Like, than I would ever speak French, like, yes, better than I ever could, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, I think we've talked a bunch about Out There. It's an awesome game. I was really happy we got to meet up with these guys and talk to them a little bit about their kind of perspective on why they built it and what's headed next. And the game is headed to PC, I believe they said soon.
Yeah, he said...
with expanded content.
Yes, I cannot wait. It's so exciting. So,
yeah, so. I think, and hopefully maybe some of that will filter back into the mobile too. We'll see. I don't know. But yeah. Did you guys...
I mean,
we didn't really play it. We
feel like we went there
to
gush, you know.
Yeah,
we kind of went there to gush. It's a little bit of a gushy interview by us, but it's also, you know, this game. One thing I do have to say very quickly is that we interviewed like an international, like it was just so cool to see so many people from all over the world coming to talk about their games. And when we talked to the guys from Miklos, and Matt mentioned, you know, they were kind of meek. But so incredibly polite and so incredibly passionate. And I could just tell that they were elated to show their game off to so many people. Because I guess, you know, there's a sense of isolation that I think a lot of these developers feel, because they spend, you know, years working on the game and sometimes don't get to see fans of it or the press or really anybody. So for them to come out and actually show it off was really cool. And the game is just so fucking great. Like, this is a game that everybody should be playing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Can I read something that they just tweeted like a few hours ago?
Sure, absolutely. Sure.
I wanted to go to the Twitter just to see if they had said anything about PAX, but their tweet says, best out there user review on the App Store. Here's the quote. A game for people who don't like to win.
Yeah.
It's
not easy.
You gotta love those roguelike games. It's so good.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah.
So stoked to talk to these
guys. I did see them like on Sunday. I was walking in the Indie Mega booth and I saw them kind of hanging out and talking to people, and it did look like their confidence had grown since when we saw them at the very beginning of Friday, essentially.
Hey, if that gets them stoked to finish that PC version, then...
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. So check out our interview with Miklos Games and Out There.
Okay, so we're here talking with Miklos Studio about the game Out There. For our listeners that are not familiar, tell us about Out There. Tell us what it is.
Okay, so Out There is a blending of roguelike and choose your own adventure. So it's a space exploration game, an adventure. There's no combat. It's all about survival in space. It's pretty realistic. There's no lasers and stuff like that, and also there is like a crafting system. You can encounter aliens, talk to them, and try to learn their language. Yeah.
What was your inspiration for a game like this? Like, were there other games or were there stories that you've read previously? Like, what inspired you to make a game like this?
There's a lot of stuff that inspired us, like video games, movie, comics. For video games, like we've got inspired by old games from the 80s, like Starfleet or Captain Blood. Also, Oregon Trail.
Oh yeah.
So because they have a very perfect pacing for mobile games, and for comics, we've been inspired by pulp comics book. You know, the cheesy ones, very very naive, because at this time they had a very very naive vision of the future, and very optimistic too.
Uh-huh.
So we really like it, and movies like
we're huge fans of the game. We play it all the time.
Yeah.
Why space? Do you have a specific interest in like space travel, space exploration?
Why space?
Yeah, why space?
Actually, I'm a big lover of space and astronomy.
Yeah.
I'm a graphic designer, and I've been drawing, inking sketchbooks for years about exploring space, but like dreamings, this kind of stuff. And when I met Fibre Tigre, the writer and game designer, he is also a lover of space, and he wrote novels about sci-fi.
Oh, cool.
Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Okay, yeah.
So there was like it was the perfect fit, and we were the only game we could make together. It was a space game.
Yeah.
So
it's perfect. So, like I said, we played the game a lot. How do we beat the game?
Yeah.
We were joking ahead of time. It's like, we love playing it. It's just so so unpredictable.
You and I have reached different
endings.
Yeah, they've reached different endings. I don't think
I got a sad ending.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
But it was good.
It's a pretty sad game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a pretty sad game. Let me actually ask a question.
Yeah.
In terms of the tone of the game, it is a dark game. It is very kind of solemn.
Yeah.
You captured the feeling of being alone in space, I think, very well. But there's a lot of humor. So there's a lot of funny things in the game, too. What made you actually add that humor, which I love?
Yeah, I think it's important to add a bit of humor. Otherwise, it's just becoming a boring, if it's always sad, I'm sad. So it's very important to add a little bit of humor, because even the most sad people in the world, they have things that make them happy. So you cannot be sad all the time. Yeah. So it's
cool. That's a good answer.
And the game is available on iOS and on PC, right?
It's already available on iOS and Android.
Uh-huh.
And we're working on the PC version, which will be an upgraded version, like the ultimate version.
Okay.
With more contents, more graphics, more stuff, very very much more tailored for PC.
Oh, when do you think that will be available, the PC version?
We don't know yet. We're just getting started. So
you plan to release on Steam or?
We don't
Not
know.
Sure.
Yeah, it's too early to say.
Yeah, it's great. How big is your team? Is it just two people?
Well, we are the two of us. It's just the two of us. And we've got some people that helped us at some point, but we work it, the two of us, full time for a year.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
That's really cool. So how did you get involved very quickly with the Indie Mega Booth? How did you hook up with the Indie Mega Booth?
Actually, we submitted our game to the Indie Mega Booth team,
uh-huh.
And they selected us.
Yeah, excellent, yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming.
We love the game, and
we
can't wait to see what you guys cook up next. We can't wait to see what other games you guys make. So yeah, we can't wait to see the whole thing. So awesome! Thanks again.
Thanks.
So the final game that we're going to have for the interviews here, this interview series, is one that was suggested to us like all over the place on the floor. Anytime we went anywhere, they were like, you got to check out, which is always kind of awesome because when it happens, it tends to be a really great game. And the name of this one is Darkest Dungeon.
Yes. So I kind of scurried over there on Sunday and I watched people play for a good half an hour. And there was, excuse me, there was a crowd of people just watching watching each other play this game. And it's a really, really unique. I said in my preview of it that I really kind of felt like the art was very Mike Mignola, like Hellboy style. So it's very dark,
like
isn't
DPRD?
It? Yeah. It's very dark, like noirish. And the game is set up in a super dark fantasy world. But the thing that they say in the interview that really stood out to me was the fact that they didn't want to rely on a lot of the traditional tropes of fantasy RPGs. So a lot of the character classes are very different. They said, for instance, they're not going to have a traditional rogue class. They instead have a highwayman, and the highwayman has different sets of abilities. He uses like an old flintlock pistol. Rather than having like a priest, they had like a plague doctor who has like, you know, a lot of like dark and kind of mysterious abilities. And rather than having like a, and I said in my preview as well, rather than having like a, everyone's doing like these 8-bit dungeon crawlers lately. A lot of indies are, for a variety of reasons. I guess they're very popular. Well, they went for a 2D dungeon crawler. So it kind of looks like you're looking at the pages of like a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm,
and every time a character attacks, the camera will like zoom into that camera, into the character, and we'll have like really basic, like 2 or 3 frames of animation during his attack. But the art style alone, you can just stare at it kind of endlessly. It's gorgeous. So, you know, the music was great. The style is great. If you're into turn-based strategy, it's perfect. It's like a very old school, you know, Final Fantasy style, like plan your attacks, the enemy attacks you, see if your stuff hits. But I absolutely, like, I fell in love with this game because I just wanted to see what more there is to it. Because even in the half an hour that I got to play, I was totally hooked. It was so much fun.
Awesome. Well, then let's just take. I actually really enjoyed this interview. So like, it's weird because when we do these interviews, there's 3 of us there. Scott's like listening in to make sure the audio's okay. Ash is doing the interview. I am literally just standing, like a spectator, like a weird spectator, watching the interview happen. But this one was really great. I love the guy. He had a lot of great things to say. So check out our interview with Darkest Dungeon.
Why don't you go ahead and say your name and the name of your project and what you do on the project.
Sure. My name is Chris Barassa. I'm the co-founder of Red Hook, and I'm the artist on Darkest Dungeon.
Awesome. So this game, I was walking by, and we are, of course, in the Indie Mega booth, and this is at PAX East 2014, and I instantly saw your art style, and I didn't realize it was you, and it drew me toward the game because it's absolutely gorgeous. It's really dark, really gothic, and, you know, frankly, it's kind of spooky. So where did you get the inspiration for this game, and what where did you really, how did you come up with the design aesthetic for this game?
Well, we just thought it would be a really interesting approach to try and tackle an RPG by eschewing the fundamental, you know, assumption that a lot of games make, which is like your hero is infallible. So we started from a place of like, all our heroes are real people. They get emotional trauma dealt to them, and you know, it's about making the best of an imperfect situation as opposed to celebrating a perfect one.
Mm.
So artistically, I just kind of tried to take that. We knew I'm a big horror fan.
Yeah.
A lot of 70s Hammer horror.
I am too. Awesome. Yeah.
So I really wanted that overwrought gothic style. I'm a big Lovecraft fan. So we wanted the game to have that, you know, Pulp Fiction-esque kind of, you know, verbiage around it.
Yeah.
So when it came to start doing concept art, I wanted to find a way of, you know, instilling it with that sense of worn feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled on a lot of comic book influences. Mike Mignola, Guy Davis, Victor Kalvachev, Avon Oeming, like all these guys who use heavy blacks.
Yeah.
It felt like from a design standpoint, the game is trying to swallow you up, and the darkness is always a consideration. So we felt like the big pooling blacks and the hard, uncompromising edges would play to that.
Awesome. So this game is honestly unlike anything I've seen in a really long time. How would you actually describe the mechanic of this game to someone who is not here to see it?
Okay. I guess I would say that it's a turn-based dungeon crawler that focuses on the emotional toll that the adventuring lifestyle takes.
Excellent.
So characters have a health bar, but they've got a stress bar as well. And everything that happens to them either adds or subtracts from that. So it's really about embracing the imperfect hero and doing your best as a manager to keep your little squad together. Think of the movie Aliens.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. They all come down and they've got...
Favorite movie of all time, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you watch the team dynamic change as they get under pressure.
Yeah.
So we're inspired by a lot of those sort of survival films.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. How important are items and loot and stuff in this game? Is it more about, in terms of progression, how does your character actually progress?
Well, we do have items and loot. You find and equip different trinkets and relics. You upgrade your weapons and armor.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be an RPG without that stuff.
Yeah.
But our focus is definitely on the personality, flaws, and strengths of the character. So that's where where we put a lot of our effort.
Okay, excellent. You mentioned before we started recording that you're kind of trying to break free of the traditional RPG tropes a little bit in terms of character class and skills.
Yeah.
How are your characters different, and how many are you perhaps working on for the game right now?
Sure. Well, we've got, I think, 15 playable character classes. Party, you know, swapping guys in and out and experimenting with different party composition is a big part of the game.
Awesome.
We wanted to sort of thematically give the game its own legs. You know, we're trying to develop an IP, you know, something that's really immersive. So we didn't want to just do fighter, mage, you know, rogue. And I mentioned also because we didn't want people bringing their presuppositions about what those classes meant to our game. We wanted to give people like a fresh experience and kind of just, you know, sideline them a little bit and maybe provide some fresh surprises.
Awesome. Let's geek out for a minute about the leper.
Okay, yeah.
Because you mentioned the leper to me as a tank class. Please tell our listening audience a little bit about this, because this may be the first game ever that has a leper as a playable tank class. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, he looks badass.
Yeah.
But we were just, I mean, the game is really fertile ground for brainstorming.
Yeah.
And so it just came up one day, like, "What, dude, what if we had a leper? Because he can't feel pain, so he'd be an amazing tank."
Yeah.
And we just kind of riff on it from there.
Yeah.
And we really want to reinforce that the characters don't have any eyes, like it's all shadowed. So the tone of the game is really heavy and morose, that Eastern European plague era kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So we want the classes to feel like they're from that time as well.
Okay.
We don't want to superimpose like modern sensibilities and threaten to erode the sort of cohesiveness of the game's vision, I guess.
Awesome. So what are some of the other classes that you guys have that you're working on right now?
Well, we got a veteran grizzled soldier man-at-arms.
Yeah.
We've got a female arbalist who's like in full plate with a giant crossbow.
Nice.
Our jester is kind of like a Rorschach meets a bard.
Nice.
Meets an assassin.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, we've got a highwayman. Vestal is kind of our cleric class.
Very cool.
Yeah, there's
and they're all gorgeous looking. Like, I love the design. I love the look of the dungeons. In terms of enemies, are you going to have dungeons? Are they kind of themed?
Absolutely.
Because like, I know when we play D&D, like, you'll have a dungeon. It's like, oh, this is like an orc dungeon. And you go in here, there's like all these orc kind of. So the dungeons are themed.
So we've got 5 different dungeon environments.
Already?
Wow.
That's incredible.
Well,
yeah,
it's a lot of drawing.
Yeah, but, I was going to say.
But each dungeon has its own set of enemies that inhabit it.
Yeah.
Its own set of kind of like events and objects to find and discover. And actually, certain character classes are even more effective in certain dungeon types. So that prompts you to constantly swap out your party members to try new things, basically.
That's awesome. I know you mentioned this to me earlier before we started recording, but how long have you guys been working on this, and how much longer do you think you have to go?
Well, we started, my partner Tyler Sigmund and I started... May, June last year. We brought on Kelvin McDowell and later Kier Myron, our engineers. And we're hoping to do early access in October.
Oh, awesome.
And then ship, you know, Jan, Feb, / give us a break, Q1.
Awesome.
Kind of thing.
Awesome. Yeah. So one thing we've been asking people, have you had the opportunity to actually walk around at all?
Not at all. Which is fantastic, quite frankly.
That you've been that busy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people are excited. I mean, I heard the buzz just kind of through the grapevine before we actually came over here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just, you know, from other media guys.
This is a great aisle. Like, NecroDancer, Chasm.
Oh, yeah.
Hyperlite,
we had
Transistor.
The guys from Jazz Punk on a couple months ago, and they were awesome. So, yeah, very, very cool. So what are you, in terms of music and such, what are you guys aiming for with that?
Well, we've got Stuart Chatwood, who's a bass player in a platinum-selling Canadian rock band called The Tea Party.
Okay.
Down here, so that's maybe a little inflammatory, especially in Boston.
Yeah.
But he did the music for Prince of Persia, Sands of Time,
and
a whole bunch of other Prince of Persia games.
Wow.
So he liked what he saw, and we teamed up with him. And we've got Power Up Audio doing like a lot of sound engineering and just fantastic sound effects. All within that really heavy, damp, you know, depressing kind of style.
Really,
and,
really cool.
We've got a narrator who's I got familiar with his work by virtue of listening to his Lovecraft audiobooks.
Oh, cool.
And so he kind of does color commentary as you go through the dungeon. He's got this amazing booming voice. His name is Wayne June.
Okay.
Just incredible stuff. And he did the voiceover for our trailers, which you can check out on our website and our Kickstarter page.
Awesome. So speaking of your trailers and social media and stuff, where can folks find you guys?
DarkestDungeon.com is not as updated as it should be, but I'm working on it.
Okay. Only so much you can do. Yeah.
Our Kickstarter page, though, is frozen in time now, and has a whole ton of information. Now that the cat's out of the bag and we've kind of announced and we're showing the game, we're going to be doing a lot more like streaming and just keeping people updated. That's the fun thing about being indie is that we don't have to play things quite as close to the chest. We're not afraid to sort of expose the ups and downs of game development, really.
Yeah, awesome. And do you guys have a Twitter account?
It's at Darkest Dungeon.
Oh, cool. You got a good one. That's really good.
Not bad,
right? That's a pretty good.
It's a lot like the name of the game.
Yeah, it's a lot like the name of the game. It's rare that happens. Usually it's like Dark_Dungeon-77. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We had a blast.
Thank you, guys. We really appreciate the interest.
Awesome. Absolutely.
So that does it for the interviews.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was cool running around. And it's funny because when we're doing them, I'm always running around pressed for time. And then we finish them like, man, I wish I would have done more. We did a lot, but it's so hard to schedule them all and actually run around and get them all with a crew of three. So we did okay. I think we did okay.
You'd be surprised how quickly an hour evaporates on the show floor. Yeah.
There are two games that I regretted not having audio from, and it was Cosmic DJ.
I agree.
And Fract. Fract, by the way, I tweeted this out from the Nerd Appropriate account. The entire soundtrack is up on SoundCloud. You can stream it all you want right now, and it is awesome. I've been listening to it endlessly while working. It's a fantastic soundtrack, so go check that out. But those were the two that I feel like, man, if I could go back in time, I would grab just a few minutes of audio with each of them. But
honorable mentions for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll talk about them more in the future because those games are coming out very soon.
I think there's a goal of trying to get the guys from Fract on at some point.
Oh, too. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we talked about this. We'll have them back.
Cool.
Hopefully. But that's it, guys.
Yeah. PAX was a blast.
Yeah.
It was great.
And then we'll have more content up on nerdappropriate.com. We'll be writing articles, so keep an eye out for those as well.
Yeah, we're going to be digging into a lot of these.
We have a romance panel coming up eventually, too.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll be up in a couple of weeks. The 4-play romance and games. Is that the third or the fourth one they've done now? Yeah.
Third
one.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That should be episode 151 for those of you who are waiting for that.
Indeed.
Cool, guys. Well, we'll be back next week with episode 150, a very special 150, with some special guests and some stuff. And it's pretty exciting.
I like stuff.
I know. It'll be stuff on it. As always, you can find us at Nerd Appropriate on Twitter. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Ash, Scott, and Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. And you can go to our Facebook account, and that is /nerdappropriate, where there's tons of activity and just endless adventures awaiting you there on our Facebook account.
And if you saw us at PAX and you got one of our business cards, you got a hint as to what the new logo and design's going to be.
There's some crazy stuff coming up. So, thank you, guys. You're awesome.
Have a good week.
Have a great week.
Have a fantastic week.
Have the best week. Cool.
Cool.
Super cool, guys.